When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
VP.
ZD.
It's the VP ZD show.
We're back.
We need a jingle.
We need a jingle. And if anyone's out there and they want to make a jingle, you can submit their suggested jingle.
Oh.
We'll try to make our own too.
Dude, that'd be awesome. Just hello at ZDogMD.com. Send me a clip of your suggested jingle, because what we do is we'll intro the show.
Yeah.
Because we never do. We never tell them who we are. Like, oh, I'm, you know, Dr. Zubin Damania, aka ZDogMD. I'm a hospitalist and health communicator. And you are?
Vinay Prasad. I'm a professor of epidemiology and biostatistics at the University of California, San Francisco. And I'm a practicing hemonc doc. But we never actually do that.
We never do it.
And we assume they know.
Because you know what? We're actually not that into credentialism.
That's right. We believe that the weight of our argument should carry the day.
That's right. I don't have to mention that I was UCSF and Stanford trained.
And that you were the commencement speaker.
That's right, at UCSF. I don't have to mention that I was deputy chief of medicine at Stanford.
And dashingly handsome. No, you don't have to mention.
That just expresses itself, right? And you don't have to mention that you're a full professor.
That's right. I got promoted.
What
yeah.
is it? Epibiostats
is my primary department, yeah. But I also have secondary appointments in medicine.
I love it, man. And now see, I'm getting old.
I know. I heard your admission on your last show.
I have to wear glasses to see up close anything, including your face now, because
it's all downhill, dude.
It's terrible, dude.
And by the way, if you pick the jingle that they submit, what are you going to give them as a prize? I think you should give them Z-Dog merchandise.
Oh, I'll send them a special Z-Dog pen. This is what they'll
okay,
get.
Okay.
And it has a typo on it. That is almost impossible to catch.
Okay.
And so if they can, I'll send them the pen if they win the jingle contest. Although what's funny is that, you know, Devin, who does all my audio production, I have not told him that I'm doing this. And he'll be like, I do your audio production. I can just make you a thing. But I think it'll be fun to have a contest.
That'll be a contest.
We'll use the jingle for a while.
If there's no submissions, we'll never talk of this again.
We will never speak of it.
We'll never speak of
it. It'll never be spake of, like Zarathustra. Dude, so our last episode, I got so much feedback. They're like, it's like two idiots talking about all the things. And
it's like car
it.
Talk, but the body.
Yes.
Yes.
We're
like the click and clack.
Dude, rest in peace.
Rest in peace. And by the way, they were terrific.
They really were.
And they were diagnosticians.
They were world-class diagnosticians. They would listen to a history. They would actually interpret the emotional bias of the history, and they would apply it then to the mechanics of the car.
They didn't take themselves too seriously.
Never. Never once. And actually, that gets into something, a show I did recently about left and right brain. Mm. So the left, and in the show, it's more metaphorical, although there's a lot of neuroscience behind it.
Sure.
But this idea that our left hemisphere really is the thing that takes the implicit, the contextual, pulls it apart, makes it explicit, and breaks it into little parts. And in many ways, so the left brain doesn't recognize faces, because a face is a full-on contextual kind of thing. Whereas the right brain sees things in its context, but it's silent because it doesn't have speech. So over time, the left brain in society and in our own kind of educational systems becomes more and more dominant.
Because it is the speech center.
It's the speech center.
So it's the path through which all outlets must go.
That's right. So it starts to, instead of being the emissary of the master right hemisphere, which is really the left hemisphere theoretically kind of evolved as the tool of the right, it's now taking on it's usurping the role of master because it can speak. And the master has to sit quietly and watch this travesty happen. And I was thinking about masking.
Okay.
That some people actually feel that it's not a big deal to have your face mostly covered when you're raising children or when you're trying to connect with people.
Even for years on end.
Years on end.
They say there's like, you know, no big deal.
Absolutely.
No biggie.
In the book, Master and His Emissary by Dr. Ian McGilchrist, he writes about people who've had right-sided brain lesions. And what they're left with is this pure left, unopposed left hemisphere. Mm-hmm. And what they find is the left hemisphere will describe total facial, I mean, they cannot recognize faces.
I see.
And patients will describe that faces look like masks, that they actually—
Right, prosopagnosia.
Exactly.
This is what Brad Pitt said he suffered from.
Ah.
Famously. Did he say he suffered from?
I think I read that. You know,
but,
so my—
But I just think he just knows too many people. I don't think he actually has prosopagnosia.
Dude, I tell people I have prosopagnosia because I can't recognize people because I see too many people.
Of course.
And of course, they're seeing me for the first time and they're like, oh yeah, he's gonna— yeah.
They've seen your face a lot more than you've seen their face.
That's exactly
that's
right.
That's the thing.
That's exactly right. So for me, I just use that as an excuse, but really it's just, I'm just too old and there's too many people. But
bring it back, the mask.
It's so interesting that, so the left hemisphere, which is the mechanistic reductionist parts instead of holes hemisphere, becoming dominant. Now, it's okay with masking.
Yes.
Because in a way, it doesn't see the face as an important thing.
So you're saying that that view is synonymous with the type of brain damage state.
It's like having a stroke.
Yeah. Okay. Here's what I say. I understand people on the airplane, and I've been traveling recently. I understand the people who going places, no mask.
Right.
I get that. I also get the person who's going to wear the N95 at all times. Like, I don't agree with that.
Right.
I don't think it makes sense in the long haul. I think you're going to have to wear it for the rest of your life if that's what you're doing.
Right.
But I kind of understand that when I see them, they're wearing it, they're skipping any food or drink. But here's what I don't get. I don't get the cloth mask when you're on the plane, but the moment you come off the run, we come off and you disembark, cloth mask comes off. I don't get the loose fitting, stretched out surgical mask. I don't get the N95, but your glasses are under the N95, creating a nice little pathway for the air to flow. This is what I don't get. And in fact, those three categories, that's the 15% masking. By the way, masking varies a lot by airport.
Yeah.
SFO, we're at the top.
At the top.
Number one, baby.
Yeah.
SFO.
Yeah. But you go anywhere else.
IAH Houston, ain't no masks inside. I think they may confiscate them from you. Take it away from
they'll
you.
They'll take it. They'll burn it.
They'll take it away from you, put a gun right in your hand. I don't know.
Get a rope. Is that a can 95? Get a rope.
Oh my goodness.
Loose fitting cloth mask. At least, wear a full on respirator. Yeah, but I think it is. It's a function of the left brainification of society.
I see.
And our public health communication. Because what would a contextual right brain, left brain synthesis say? Exactly what you're saying. It would notice the absurdity. So the right brain is the hemisphere of humor. It actually is the one that can go, oh, dude, that's absurd. It understands sarcasm. Left brain is very concrete. So patients with schizophrenia have a much more left brain worldview and they feel it. They actually, it's-
And you're using the brain as a metaphor, but it's a broader point, which is that, the way in which we think about risks and trade-offs and life is this one thing that we can measure and, put up on the New York Times masthead.
That's right.
That's the dominating thought. And all these other things that are a little bit harder to measure, which is what is the value of getting to talk to you right now without and seeing your face?
Bingo.
It's hard to put a number on that, but there is a value.
That's right. And in the metaphor, that's the purview of the right brain. The normal flow of experiences, the right brain contextually sees the thing, mm-hmm. sends the left brain out to drill down and break it into things so we can understand it better, and then come back to the right, put it in context. Mm-hmm. What we fail to do is that last step. We're just drilling down and we're mechanizing it. We're making it, that way. It's interesting. So, there was a recent news article, right? Maitland Jones, professor.
That's right.
Speaking of changes in how we think over time.
That's why you're the pro, because you got that segue. That was a hard.
I struggled. Did you see the gears turning?
How am I gonna go?
Someone help. And left brain was like, well, there's this piece and this piece and this piece. And right brain was like, okay, just
see
do
what
this.
The listener should know is before the show starts, we talk for 15 seconds and we say, hey, it's really 15 seconds. Yeah. What are the things we should talk about? And we're like, we got to talk about Maitland Jones. Now, Z was supposed to talk about that first, but he switched the order, but that's okay.
Yep.
He's entitled to that. But he left himself quite a quandary connecting it.
He nailed it. He was like, how am I going to get back to Maitland Jones?
So like, on that positive note, Maitland Jones.
Yeah, exactly. You noticed the pause. There was a second where I just looked at the ground and I was like, brain was like, do something, Z. Or this will be an edit
but,
point, which we don't do.
You're very good at it. I don't think the listener fully appreciates that it takes a talent to be able to connect different ideas and get people through they want to talk about.
I'm going to give the compliment back to you because without you in the dyad here, we're not in a flow state. And a flow state allows you to be so present that you don't lose, you almost get in a way the pieces just come from nowhere.
That's a
and
good
they,
point.
They synthesize.
And we'll talk about presentness when we talk about Zuck towards the end of this podcast.
Oh, that'll be great. Yeah.
Okay, but Maitland Jones. Who's Maitland Jones?
Oh, yeah.
He's 82 years old.
Goodness. He's my dad's age, yeah.
And he's still proffing. He's still out there hitting the classes every year. So I think my understanding is the textbook of organic chemistry that I used, and I suspect the one you used, is the Maitland Jones textbook of Orgo.
Yeah.
And he was a professor at Princeton. He was an organic chemistry professor. By most accounts, he's won, you know, many, many teaching awards. He became an adjunct in his retirement at NYU and started teaching. And even there, by all accounts, he was thought to be a very good teacher until the COVID-19 pandemic,
yeah,
where his evals have slipped,
yeah,
and the grades of the students have slipped. And recently, the New York Times, he got the boot. He was fired.
Yep.
And there's different stories, and I've had a chance to explore the stories. Maitland Jones' story. Let's hear Maitland Jones' story. Maitland Jones' story is, I'm a revered organic chemistry professor. I've been doing this for, you know, before you were born. And throughout most of my career, students were willing to put in the hard work and effort. I was willing to put in the hard work and effort. We would meet in the middle. Some kids could master Orgo. There's always a few kids who would struggle to do it. And the kids who can master it, they really get something out. Maitland Jones, supposedly, he wasn't a memorization guy. He was a problem solving, synthesizing
compounds. And for people who don't know organic chemistry, it is a really challenging, intellectually challenging. You have to think left brain and right brain together to do OChem. It's not just memorization.
I had a great Orgo professor. His name was Michael Rathke.
Oh.
And he said, he used to say things like, and if you don't believe these are the same molecule, put them both in a gunny sack and shake it out and see if you can tell them apart. And I was like, a gunny sack?
Who is this guy?
This is his thing. But he was an older guy, but he was brilliant and he had a charisma to him. He had the old man charm.
Yeah.
You know, the classic old man professor charm.
Yeah.
Anyway, I've never met Maitland Jones, but this is Michael Rathke.
And we had the same at Berkeley, a guy named Volkman, I think. Volkman.
So that's also a textbook author, isn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So he wrote another textbook. We might have used his textbook, actually.
Oh,
so,
he took that Maitland Jones book.
Oh, yeah.
And
he's like, toss that crap. It's Volkman. If that was his name. Volk something. But he used to drive a Ferrari.
Shut up.
Or a Lamborghini, some very high-end thing. And he'd drive it on campus. And I think he either had, I don't know if he had a Nobel Prize or he had some special parking spot, because at Berkeley, they had signs that say parking for Nobel laureates only.
And he would put his car there.
And the Ferrari.
How'd he get the Lambo money?
Dude, I think that he did stuff with industry through OChem, but I'm not 100% sure. I mean, because that textbook money, I mean, come on.
Oh,
you know how that is.
I'll tell you what, you'll be lucky to buy a Honda Civic with that car. And actually, with inflation, you're going to buy no car, not even a used car.
Dude, in the Bay Area, the Honda Civic is the Tesla Model 3.
That is the entry level car in the Bay Area.
It is.
You have to have a Tesla.
So back to Maitland.
Okay. So his account is, I've been doing this for many years. I'm good at it. I've always done it. We've always met in the middle. The students are happy. I'm happy. I win all these awards. COVID-19 pandemic comes. They're all work from home, Zooming. They've lost their work ethic. We try to bring them back to class. They don't show. They just want to watch the lectures. They're not studying. And lo and behold, their grades go in the toilet. And most of them are not getting good grades. Few are getting A's. The university wants me to just, you know, artificially boost everyone's grade. I won't play by those rules. I'm old school. You either know it or you don't know it. That's Maitland Jones. And we can't go soft on you because you don't want to learn. You got to hit the books hard.
Yeah.
That's Maitland Jones. And he said, he drew the line. And then they were like, you know what? The students are not happy. Universities, they're not here to educate kids. They're the customer service business. So you got to go, Maitland.
Yeah.
That's
his story. These guys are paying tuition. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So
that's his story.
That's his story. The second story I read was like reading the comments deep. Somebody's like, well, I'm a student of Maitland Jones. And guess what? I actually got like perfect scores on the MCAT chemistry and I'm really good at this. But the dude is slipping. Like he's not teaching it the same way he used to, or maybe it's like not as charismatic and there are other teachers who are doing a better job. And like he was fired, not because he held a high bar, because the dude wasn't an effective communicator anymore. And that can always happen to anybody.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Happened to us over the last few years.
Hey, we're on the upswing, dog.
Yeah, of course.
We're getting better and better. People are like,
we're like
dude,
a fine wine. We're aging well.
I don't usually look at statistics anymore because I just can't.
Too many zeros.
Exactly. Yeah. On my bank account. I'm just making it rain. It's more like what I owe the government right now.
Right.
The last podcast we did was the number two episode in science and medicine at its peak.
That's because
just the last episode because we suck so bad.
Yeah. Well, it's a good show. I mean, I listen to shows, and by the way of shows, I would listen to this show, you know?
Yeah. If I didn't hate us both.
If I didn't hate. At Z-Dog MD.
Yeah, you are
at
the
Cal Academy.
Okay, back to Maitland Jones. Okay, so there's two sides so far.
There's two sides to the story.
Yeah.
I got 3 points.
Okay.
I think three things can all be true.
Yeah.
Okay, one, I think Maitland Jones has probably got a point that these kids pre-pandemic, and I think there's some truth to this, they were willing to study more and show up to class. And you do learn more when you drag yourself and sit there in that room and you actually get more out of it.
Totally.
And if you watch some video, and by the way, this is not a YouTube video quality video. This is like some crap camera in the back of an auditorium.
Shitty audio.
You ain't gonna learn anything from that. Okay, so Maitland Jones might have a point that they're not putting in the effort. I mean, he's probably onto something. The second thing that might be true is he might really actually be slipping.
Yeah.
Like maybe he is no longer as effective as he was. We don't know. Only the kids in the class know. And maybe if some impartial person were to assess it. And then the third thing I think, but the first thing is I concede to him, the kids are probably getting a little bit soft and we can talk more about that.
Right.
Then the third thing I think is, why are we doing all this orgo? I was like, I think we have to bring back right. to like orgo was a prerequisite for medical school back in 19 diggity,
right.
where orgo was the closest science to what we were doing.
Right.
We have advanced far beyond orgo.
Right.
Orgo's still, you know, useful for somebody who makes synthetic chemical products, but doctors don't make that. They prescribe that and they need to understand the evidence for prescriptions, not necessarily the organic chemistry that leads to the synthesis of the ACE inhibitor. So I think it's actually antiquated. It's not relevant. Some people say that even though it's not relevant, you still need a class that's a quote unquote weeder class, like that gives people bad grades so they never get to be doctors.
Right.
And what I want to say is you have no data that ever shows that weeding people by organic chemistry is a useful filter. Like if you prove to me people get higher orgo scores or better doctors than those that get lower scores or those that flunk the class, that would be one thing. There's no such data. And the other thing I'd say is by that logic, you could say we could give you a test of memorizing all the world capitals, Mongolia.
Bukhar. I made that up.
Ulaanbaatar.
Ulaanbaatar.
Okay, right. I don't know. Okay, you know, right. But you could give a quiz of like rote memorization, and some people are going to do better than others. And you could take baseball statistics from the 1950s, for instance. And then you could say, we are making a prerequisite for medical school be baseball statistics in the 1950s, because people who memorize that better are better doctors. And my point there would be, okay, fine, but don't you want to teach them some shit that they need to know when they're actually a doctor?
And kill two birds with one stone.
The baseball statistic.
No, exactly.
So if you're going to use a weeder class, it should also be something relevant to the art or the practice of the medicine.
Yeah. I am 150% with you.
Yeah.
So actually this ties into the story very well, because okay. I also read a few articles
okay,
on this.
Okay.
And
what do you hear?
And I think, okay, couple things. So, okay, first thing, lower your seat ever so slightly. And I'll tell you why. I'm looking at the screen.
Too much headspace.
And your beautiful hair.
Which has been chopped to bits.
They cut it, first of all.
By the butcher.
So Samson, yeah, does it lower?
No. Oh, there it is.
There it is. There it is. Yeah.
Am
yeah, that's
now?
It. That's perfect. I think that's better. Yeah. And then just a little this. Yeah. See, because I got to be the tech guy. My daughter edits the shows now.
Oh, that's
my 11-year-old. And she'll yell at me. She'll be like, the way you framed Vinay, you know, he's got too much
she's
hair.
She's got an eye for this.
Oh, yeah, she does. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, you know what? Since we were saying earlier, you're either now for kids, you're either a content creator or you're a content consumer.
That's it.
I'm pushing her to create.
Of course.
All right. So back to Maitland.
Back to Maitland. Okay. What'd you read about Maitland?
So the article I read was very, very similar. Okay. Couple standpoints here. The guy's own department supports him.
Oh,
because
they
see it as a potential slippery slope. He's a revered guy. And they're like, listen, you know, you can't just fire this guy with no due process. Although he's not tenured. Again, he's like kind of coming in and doing this as a emeritus, kind of not his primary organization, et cetera, at NYU. Because he was a Princeton guy, I think, and or something like that. And,
yes, he's a Princeton guy. Yeah.
So the faculty supported him. Then if you ask the kids, there were a few people they interviewed who got A's in the course, and they're like, this guy's a legend.
Yeah.
We love him.
He does
great. These other people just can't hack it.
Yeah.
But then the comment you read was different. It's like, no, I did well.
Yeah.
But you got to understand this guy's slipping.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Now,
how do you know who's true?
You can't know. Now, my sense is one of the faculty reports, from the people that had fired him had said he gets some of the worst faculty evaluations of any department, not just chemistry. Now that says something, because evaluations, as crummy as they can be,
right.
they're often
a clue.
They skew true.
Yeah.
And if he's actually, and so what I wonder happened here is whether he got so disheartened by seeing what you're pointing to, which is
that he wasn't putting the work in.
He's like, these kids are gone. They're just gone. They're checked out. And so as a result, why should I even try? Because they're not showing up. And he would say, they said it in the article, the class is mostly empty. They're all watching the videos and And they can't do it. They can't do the work because these are, you have to be there with that guy in presence to feel how he thinks through these problems. Now, I'll say this too. As a weeder class, a lot of the outrage came from pre-meds who were like, this has ruined my dreams because I cannot get an A in this class and I will not go to medical school. Now, I will say this to them. O-Chem was a weeder class when I was at Berkeley. That was my sophomore year of Berkeley when I decided I was going to smoke weed and hang out with my friends and not go to class.
And you still got all the questions. No, you still got everyone right.
The first semester, we were on semester system, was the first time in my life that I got B's. And the reason, and the reason I got B's was I didn't go to class. I would cram like the night before because I had so much hubris. I'm like, oh, first year was easy. I could do this. I got this. And I'm having fun with my friends. The first time I've been away from home and the first time I've, you know, been by myself and exploring these things. And I got devastated. Like, I think I might have failed one of the midterms. And then the final, I got mono.
Wow.
And so I took it while I had mono, and I was just so behind. I'd never spent time with the professor. I'd never gone to offer
another excuse.
It was another excuse.
You're for the being Roger Federer. I heard he had mono in some big match many years ago. That's why he lost. Yeah. Okay. You know what?
Listen.
Keep talking like that. You could be a student in 2022.
I'll tell you what.
go on.
To this day, I have anxiety dreams about O-Chem. To this day.
Wow.
And I also have anxiety dreams about getting a splenectomy because I've, my spleen was this big.
But from the mono.
From the mono, which actually was an excuse because I was already getting over it by the time but I had to sit on the train going back to Fresno after that final.
Wow.
And I looked so ill, no one would sit next to me.
Wow.
Even
and that's
though
pre-COVID.
The train was full. This is pre-COVID. This was 1994
and
or something.
Like, wow.
92,
like, that
92.
Guy does not look good.
He doesn't look well.
What year was it?
It was, it would have been 92.
Oh, so maybe they thought HIV/AIDS epidemic.
They thought I had AIDS. Full blown AIDS. If
maybe
that's
they
a
thought
thing.
That
back then.
Maybe they thought that.
And so the weeder class thing. So you know, here I get all B's and all these science like requirements.
Uh-huh.
So how the hell did I get into medical school? Well, I actually got back on the horse and got passionate about it, and I struggled.
There's usually
back.
No one.
It's no one thing.
I mean, it's no one thing as a strict cutoff. I mean, if you get consistently bad GPA in science, then I think yes, that's going to make it a lot harder. But these things are all sort of probabilistic, and they're not absolute. And so there's always somebody who got a bad orgo grade.
And you know what's interesting is I think that's an interesting screening technique. Like somebody who did well and then suddenly does really bad.
Yeah.
And then suddenly
it's usually substance.
Recovers. It's usually substance.
Substance
related.
Or the first time they've had a serious relationship with someone. Something like that.
And it might have been both
or
those things.
Or bad relationship.
It might have been both those things.
Well, now I know he got the mono. I mean, I wasn't too surprised.
That's true. Yeah, exactly.
See, I had the
and
opposite.
And the HIV, right?
of course. That's why they went.
And the monkeypox. I was ahead of my time.
You're ahead of your time.
I was a gunner.
And you know, you were wearing the N95 back in those days. No. So, you know, I'm biased. Well, not biased, but I had a very different experience. I had Michael Rathke, the sweetest man ever. And so I learned orgo really good.
That's awesome.
And then, you know, I wanted to keep open the door to going to medical school.
Right.
So back in those days, that meant you had to do research.
Uh-huh.
And you did fruit fly
that's
research.
That's right. That's right.
I remember.
That's right.
You were Lord of the Flies.
I was Lord of the Flies.
Tape, right? To this day, you still keep a jar of vinegar and a few drops of dishwashing detergent in it to travel.
I have a CO2 tank at home to anesthetize humans as well as
whoever
in
you need
flies.
To anesthetize.
Exactly.
So I did my research in biologic polymer synthesis, organic chemistry.
Wow.
And so I work with Mitch Smith in the laboratory there. And I don't know, I don't try to brag on this show, but first prize undergraduate research fair.
Yes.
I was like Walter White, my friend. I could cook you whatever you wanted to.
The blue. Dude.
But I'll tell you, the only thing I remember of Orgo is, because now my memory is vague. And actually, it actually came up the other day because this is a true story. I was in some restaurant and on the wall, they had a neon sign and the neon sign was like a benzene ring with like two hydroxyl groups and then like this ammonia ring, this ammonia molecule off the side. And I was like, what the hell is that compound? I couldn't think about it. And I met somebody who's a chemist and the only thing Orgo was good for was I actually remembered what it looked like. I drew it and they're like, oh, dopamine.
Oh,
you know?
Wow.
And I was like, and this person was like, I'm like, okay, pretty good.
That's a great fucking story. Story.
Yeah. We're not supposed to swear.
We're not supposed
VPCD.
To. But
it's a PG show. People play this in front of their children.
They do.
They teach them.
They listen in the car and they're like, this is what, and you know what they're teaching them? If they're Asian immigrants, like you and I are the children of, they're teaching them, don't do what those two did. Okay. No marijuana in school and no girlfriend or boyfriend or them friend if your pronouns are different. Okay.
And then they're also teaching them, if you do good in orgo, you go to medical school.
That's right.
And if you don't do good, you become a content creator.
Exactly. Okay, like my daughter's going to be.
Well, so, but you don't want to be a content consumer. Okay, but okay. So the screen.
Yeah.
So you think Orgo is trash?
I think they pushed on him too because the pre-med contingent felt so strongly about this as a screen,
yeah,
which I think is not a good reason to push on him. A good reason is he probably was phoning it in at some point, and he's 82, so stuff does happen.
Hey, that's the age of Anthony Fauci. Are you saying Anthony Fauci's not peak at job performance?
Ooh, good point. I guess I'll have to backtrack on that because as a card-carrying member of the COVIDian, ACLU, the American COVIDian, Liberty Union.
Yeah, that's okay.
I can't hurt Lord Fauci's feelings.
Okay.
But it's because it's funny too, because as a press piece, because you write a lot in Sensible Medicine with, did it break?
Oh,
here, I got you.
No, okay. It's a little floppy. I think I fixed it. I just put the.
It's that stand is not designed for the weight of that mic.
It was made by Maitland Jones. Okay, go on.
Okay. So, what were we saying? We were talking about, oh man, this is where our flow state gets disrupted.
He's got the glasses and he's got, a little bit of forgetfulness.
I'm staring at my Parkinson's tremor.
Yeah, no.
Wait a minute.
And this is might have been how the teaching was going on in the classroom.
Fully possible, right? We were talking ACLU. We were talking about COVIDian.
Well, I'll help you while you think about your thought.
Yeah.
Here's what I think we agree broadly on this. The brushstrokes of this argument. Number one, is it possible Maitland Jones was great? Absolutely, that's indisputable. Is it possible he's not? He's phoning it in these days? Absolutely. But the second thing that we need to talk about a little bit more are the students.
Yeah.
And I do think this is why the article resonates, because whether or not this happened in the Maitland Jones case, many people, many teachers do believe it is a different culture of teaching in 2022 than it was.
Definitely in medicine, for sure.
Definitely in medicine. And I think even maybe worse in the other fields.
Yeah.
And the key difference is
Zoom.
Zoom. Yeah. That blew their brains.
Yep.
I mean, it's obviously a terrible education online.
Yep.
That's not just my opinion of it, my experience of it, but also every single peer-reviewed public paper on the topic. That's terrible.
Yep.
But I also think that students they're in the customer service business now. I mean, every year goes by, I hear students have corrected a faculty for, you know, yelled at a faculty for saying something that they thought wasn't the correct way to say things. And I don't even disagree with them that like, that they might be right that we should take language and move it in this more progressive, thoughtful, sensitive way. They might be right about that. What I don't agree with them is that the way to fix it is to take some old professor who just is not hip to what you're saying and didn't get the memo.
Yeah.
And some of these professors are not, English is not their first language, by the way. That makes it harder.
Right.
And chastising them. And you know why they do it? It's a way, I think, we'll talk about why, but I think they are, it's about power. It's not about the issue. If you really care about the injustice in the world, and where's the injustice? The injustice in the world is tremendous. And it's almost all in early childhood development outcomes.
Yeah.
It's all in wealth inequality. It's all huge problems that require political consensus. It requires you to go to government and fix these problems of regulation, of corporatism, of cronyism, of disparity, of wealth concentration, and of all the ways in which the system is rigged. And I think the system is rigged. Instead of doing any of that, they don't want to do that. That's hard.
No.
I mean, that's hard and you may not succeed. What they want to do is the one thing they can do, which is I can take somebody who's mostly in my tribe, who mostly agrees with me, but they're older, they're aloof, they don't know how to speak hip the way young people speak, and I can shame them, humiliate them for not being, quote, as pure and good as me. No student will ever go into medicine, and in PGY1, they can never know more than the attending. Why? Even the most brilliant person could not know because it takes years to like even hear about all the many things that happen in medicine. And so they come, these brilliant kids, they're very smart, they've always been praised their whole life, and they are the bottom of the totem pole, and sometimes they don't even know the words that are coming out of my mouth because I'm talking about, you know, diseases they've never heard of, they don't know the treatment, you know, because it's all, I mean, it's natural, they have to learn it.
Yeah.
And that can make you feel anxious, you don't have power, and the way to seize power is to create a new discipline where you alone can be king or queen, you can be the boss, and that's the discipline of the politically correct word choice. They are creating the politically correct word choice. Only the youth knows it. I'm almost 40, and even I don't know how. I mean, I know more than an older person like you. I know
more than you.
Hey, I have all the pronouns. Every last one.
There are so many other word choice issues that you don't even know. You don't even know what you don't know.
I know. I'm ableist, apparently.
Yeah.
I say things that come off as ableist. I don't even know what that means. So
my understanding of it is that what that means is that somebody who is able-bodied and whose mental health is sound or strong, maybe that's a better word for whatever, they're going to be angry to say sound.
Right.
Views that like everyone has to have that same sort of ability to do anything in life, whereas people who don't have all these abilities can do a lot.
Right.
That's true, absolutely.
Right, neurodiversity, all the other things, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All these things are, I think, true. But at the same point, like, it is not ableist to say that there is no benefit for mask mandates. You've never proven that in randomized studies. Ergo, we need to strip it. That's not an ableist thought. Their counterargument is, well, the immunocompromised person out there is more vulnerable now thanks to your ableist view. That's what they kind of say it.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, oh, where's the evidence that's true? You have no evidence that is true. You just made that up to fit your worldview. You're using that loaded rhetorical term ableist, but you have not proven to me that me wearing a useless cloth mask will protect them. And in fact, if anything, it may lead to worse outcomes because their behavior has changed in a way that is actually deleterious, right? Risk compensation.
Yeah. You're preaching to the choir on this. Yeah. That's exactly right.
So much stuff
now, because as you were talking, I remembered where I lost my train of thought. Mm-hmm. And it was simply this. And then we're going to get back to this.
It was about your car keys.
It was my car keys. And, you know, wait, whose glasses are these? What's even going on? I don't even know. Whose arm is this? Am I having a stroke? The part of the thing about the whole Maitland Jones piece was the press's, notice our emotional response to the article headline itself.
Yeah.
So the minute people start sending me that, 100 people are sending me it. And it's all that instant, like, where are you on this spectrum? And you'll just respond to the article that way. Very few people will dig into the nuance of the article like you and I just did, where we're like, okay, here's what's going on. What could be happening here? What could be happening here? Okay, here's where the kids are here. And so that's part of the problem with this kind of journalism of clickbait journalism. It's really going to appeal. Now, if you actually read the full New York Times thing, you will get some of that nuance.
You'll get some of it.
But it's clearly weighted in a certain direction to generate outrage. Oh, this old esteemed professor was fired. Okay, well,
they don't acknowledge that he could be doing a shitty job.
That's right.
That's the one thing the article that's missing.
That's right.
But he could be doing a shitty job. Okay, but go on.
That's right.
So they're getting our emotional cue. But why is it hitting a chord?
Yeah, why is it hitting a chord? Because it's something true in our experience that you've pointed to and I've pointed
to. Which is that we think these kids are weak.
They're weak as hell. First of all, I'm going to go full ableism on this. They're completely unable.
But let me draw a distinction here.
Yes.
Okay, to bail you out of a comment threat.
No, oh, yeah,
not
yeah,
to bail
yeah.
you out, but to, well, be, to, be, more on, no, to be
yeah.
more honest.
Yeah.
The best 15% of the students, they're as hardworking as they ever were.
They're even better than us, than we ever could have been.
I'll tell you, I have a couple that like work with me. They're like, you know, they run more than I do. They bike more than I did at the age. They're better. They cook better. They're fitter and they work harder and they're smarter than I was at that age.
And they meditate and they're spiritually more awake. You're like, who are these people?
This is progress.
The best ones. Yeah.
Okay. But there's a whole bunch of other people and they're probably the same as they were back in our days. But their difference is that now we have sanctioned them in weak thinking.
Yeah.
Like back in the day, somebody who didn't work that hard they at least felt some remorse.
Yeah.
They felt like, well, it's up to, you know, maybe it was my fault. Maybe I could do better. Maybe I should change myself because I'm not getting the grades that I want.
Yeah.
Now the whole world is, if I'm not doing well, it's your problem.
Yeah, it's your
you
problem.
Didn't give me the right grade.
That's right.
And you know, the reason it's setting them up for failure is in this life, you know, there is no one on this planet you can change but yourself.
That's right.
Nobody will bow to you or bend to you. No. If you want to feel differently about something, you need to change your thinking and your behavior.
1,000%. Yeah. That's really all it is. It's like we create our own worlds. So let's do it right. And that means taking responsibility, making yourself accountable. But it also means, look, if you are suffering, if someone is a total butt clown to you, you stand up for yourself and you do it. But not this way is all, it, like you said, it's almost like it's the only sense of power they have. And that's not a good way to feel in the world. You have all the power ultimately.
You do. Let's say hypothetically, Maitland Jones is lost it and he's not as good as he was.
Right.
Hypothetically. I had teachers like that.
Sure.
And what did I do? I didn't accept the bad grade.
No, yeah.
I still got the good grade. Why?
Yeah.
Because I had to work four times as hard to outsmart them to know that even though this person isn't putting it in and this person is pissed off, or this person's not a good teacher, I can still learn the material either from their lecture notes or their slides or from other students who took the class or whatever.
Yeah.
Because I didn't throw my hands up in defeat. I didn't say, we never would have signed a petition. That's the other thing that's arrogant. So sign a petition and 82 out of 300 people sign it. By the way, that means that the bulk of the opinion, you don't know what it is because they didn't sign it.
You don't know.
But everything's a petition. Yeah. Sign a petition to change the name of a lecture hall,
right.
To change a professor,
right.
To change the name of this thing,
right.
To move the statue from here to there or turn it, I don't know, all these petitions. Everyone is distracted. None of this matters. Focus, put your head down, learn the topic. I agree with you. Orgo shouldn't be the prerequisite. If you want to fix that, and I wanted to fix that for a long time, you can go check my paper trail. 2009, I published on this topic. It shouldn't be a prerequisite in academic medicine. I published again in another, I forget the journal name, but it was, it's called, oh my God.
Mad Magazine?
No, I'm an old man, so I even forget the title. It's called, Persistent Reservations in the Pre-Medical Curriculum. It's something about how they continue to oppose these kinds of reforms.
Yep.
So, I mean, if you really think orgo shouldn't be a prerequisite, I don't think it should be, then you know what you got to do? You got to become a doctor, become a med ed, and then pull that out.
Yeah, that's right. And you have to... You have to use some degree of science and reason together to try to determine what's a good proxy then to measure what's going to make a good doctor. And is it a one size fits all, or is, you know, a good surgeon is different than a good oncologist is different.
That's true.
Good medicine. I mean, they're all different. And then the good researcher is very different than that.
And somebody in drug development, they might need to know orgo.
They need it. Or someone who's going to go, some kind of pharmacological thing. Do the pharmacists need to know organic chemistry?
I don't know.
I'm not sure because I don't know enough about their general day-to-day practice.
Maybe it's just take the yellow pill or the blue pill. I don't know.
But I love what you said, that what should you be screening for? It ought to be the ability to actually look at data and go, does this thing actually work?
Right.
Yeah. Now, the other piece that tied into this, well, there's two things. So the first is, you were talking about this whole idea of using the, you know, like Z-year-old and you don't even know like all the things.
Yeah.
Well, listen to this. Yeah. So I don't know if you saw this. There was, we didn't talk about this before the show because it just came into my head again. My buddy sent me this thing from Scientific American. It was an op-ed. It was written by three people.
God help.
And the term JEDI, J-E-D-I,
okay,
Justice, Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion,
I didn't know
is
that.
Used in that space.
Okay.
They wrote an entire—
I thought about Star Wars.
right? Because that's where the JEDI ought to be. Okay. Op-ed was how they should not use JEDI because it has the connotation of Star Wars, and the JEDI were the opposite of diversity, inclusion, and justice.
Right, they were of all races. Isn't that green thing a Jedi?
This is literally what it said. This is what they said. They said that the Jedi were eugenicists.
No, they
were. They used that term.
The Jedi?
The Jedi.
I haven't watched enough Star Wars.
Because they're selecting for people with the midichlorians who have the force and bringing them into their tribe. So you have to be born with a certain genetics in order to be a Jedi. So they were eugenicists.
I see. But I guess one thing is they've assumed that the force is a genetic trait and it might be some joie de vie, some spark of, I don't know what it might be.
Well, the problem is Lucas degenerated it into your midichlorian count in the Phantom Menace.
I don't know what that
Phantom
word means.
Yeah, so apparently in the prequels, the Phantom Menace, he was like, this Anakin Skywalker has the highest midichlorian count I've ever measured.
I see.
And apparently they're little force particles.
So they
reduced this mystical thing to midichlorians. So that's what they were saying. The other thing they were saying
it's
is
like an LDL.
Yes, it's like LDL. Like, what's your LDL? What's your midichlorians? They're off the chart. Oh, dude, you got so much force power, bro.
I see. So that is eugenicist. Because then it's inborn.
White saviorism. So that the Jedi come into different planets and they try to save them from themselves.
I see. But now many of them are not white.
In fact, none of them really are white because they're all aliens. So can you really call them Caucasian? I don't know. But many of them are green.
But I mean, the movies were made in the 70s where,
that's true.
I mean,
all the actors.
But now all the actors in the new movies are like very diverse.
Multicultural. Right. Exactly. And then they said that they're violent, of course. Well, they are defenders of the Galactic Republic. But
I see where you're going. Your point is that this is the shit they're talking
about.
This
is what they're talking
about. And one more example, the Journal of Hospital Medicine has an article about how we shouldn't use the word tribalism to describe, you know, what we would call tribe. I mean, I don't know what other word to use.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know what? Because they think tribalism has been co-opted by the right. This is a thing that I've read.
No,
recently.
I thought it was an insult to Native Americans, sort of.
They're saying all the people on the right use this term tribalism. Yeah, you guys are behaving. It's all tribalism. And it's like, they don't care that it's, you know, Native Americans are angry and this and this and the other. And it's like, we've been using tribalism for a long time.
And are Native Americans even angry about it? Is it like Latinx, where like if you ask somebody who's Latino, they'll say, stop saying Latinx. But if you ask a rich white person from the suburbs, they'll say Latinx. Like, which is it?
It's interesting. So I have gotten an email from a Native American, someone who identifies as Native American, saying, you use the term tribe a lot, tribalism a lot, just so you know, this is what it means to my people. And the way you use it is a different connotation. And
but what about karma? You're
right, karma.
I'm Indian, and first of all, that's not how we pronounce it.
That's right.
But I see the karma.
What's your karma?
Good karma, right, buddy? I'm like, oh my God.
Bro, your karma's crap. It's almost a cultural appropriation kind of question at that point. Like, what are you doing? But all culture is cultural appropriation.
But I guess what I want to say is, like, I don't go to people and I say, stop using karma like
right.
that and stop,
right.
and stop doing yoga if you can drink all those glasses of red wine.
That's right. That's right.
Okay, but I mean, maybe we're going the same place, but the point I want to make is, the point that you can either win the issues that matter.
Yes, right.
Or you can win this word police game.
This nonsense game.
And if you play this word police game, you're losing so many people.
Yeah.
You do not understand. The reason that article Maitland Jones is resonating, the reason it's exploded across, many people, whether or not the story is true, they want the archetype of the students are picking on things that don't matter. They're not, you know, just sucking it up like we used to suck it up. And again, there's something in between. If he's abusive, if he's really like the worst professor on
totally.
Earth, there should be some format to throw him out. Yeah. I don't know what it should be.
Yeah.
But
maybe it's this. Maybe it's what happened.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Maybe it was not. Yeah. Right. Maybe that's true in this case,
right.
actually. But because you've abused this so many times in so many instances and picking on all these words, I don't know. If you want to change the word, start using it the way you want to use it.
Yeah.
And then
let the culture change it organically.
I don't see what you gain at all by taking somebody who is basically you, because they don't know you, but yeah. I know you. You are not a conservative right-wing person
right.
from a red state. You live in the most liberal place on earth, and you are probably by all benchmarks an extremely progressive person. You just may not be as progressive as they want you to be.
Right.
And then they want to like tell you what to do, and they don't see they are losing all the issues that matter.
Yeah. It's a kind of a scolding tone to a lot of times. But you know, I have to say that conversation I had with this particular person was very productive, you know, because we went back and forth, because I actually take those emails seriously.
Yeah,
like those are emails where I'm like, okay, well, There's definitely a power differential between different racial groups in this country.
To this day.
And so it behooves anybody who's in a group that isn't as disadvantaged to listen when someone says, hey, you know, this is my concern with this. Okay, fine.
Okay, we'll listen. But then the added asterisk is like, what if you will definitely find somebody from Venezuela who likes Latinx, but every survey I've ever read.
They don't.
So we have to like be careful that the person emailing
that's
you
right.
is not
that's
the-
That's right.
Because,
very good point.
Okay.
You need a big sample size. You need to do the science correctly. Because Latinx is an interesting one because they're trying to degenderify a statement.
A language that is gendered.
Based on gender. Yeah. Latina, Latino, et cetera. So,
Even the nouns. La iglesia.
Right. Whereas even, you know, like English, like in Asian languages, they don't even have those gendered things. So a lot of Asian people will mispronoun people.
And somebody told me that in Mandarin, they don't even have tense. Like,
yeah, it's not even, yeah.
There's not even tense. Like yesterday I do this and today I do this.
Right, which is why in English, a lot of times they'll mistense or they'll mispronoun and so on. And then you ascribe some degree of incompetence to their ability to speak English, whereas they're just really wired that way. Like, just like they are more likely to have perfect pitch, Mandarin speakers, because early on they're exposed
tonality.
To tonal language, right?
And so, just like Mark Zuckerberg is good vocabulary, but his language don't sound good.
Now that's the last piece I want to say before we go on to that.
Uh-huh.
So
you like that segue?
I love it. It was good. Your right brain is on fire today.
Maitland Jones.
So Maitland Jones, the other piece was you were talking about kids and how they've changed over pandemic and how maybe Maitland Jones is responding to
that.
So there was a study. Now I put study in quotes because this is a psychological study. We know that those are
often—
So
it's good for hidden brain.
That's right.
And by the way, hidden brain was probably number one on that ranking.
I think it was. What's the guy's name?
Shankar Vedanta.
Shankar.
Yeah,
he's a brother. We'll give him that.
Yeah, he's that.
We'll give him that.
But it's always like, according to a study of 42 people.
That's right. So this was an NPR article about, according to a study out of Cornell.
Yeah, 42 Cornell first year students who are entirely representative of Americans.
Of the world.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. Exactly right. So what they looked at was the big five personality traits.
Okay.
Ocean, openness to experience, conscientiousness, extroversion, like how out are you connecting with people? Agreeableness, which is generally kind of politeness and ability to get along, and neuroticism, which is the only like kind of pure negative one, the kind of like high stress, anxiety. Like,
but no, you need a little neuroticism to check the boxes.
You need it, but it's the one that if it goes up, the other ones, if they go up, it's okay.
If the neuroticism goes up, so does the N95.
So that you're reading the mind of the study. So what they found was pre-pandemic, intra-pandemic, post-pandemic. Mm-hmm. Personality generally does not change much over time. That's those ocean, right? But they can change during acute events, during big personal tragedies and that kind of thing. And in general, children as they age get slightly more agreeable, less neurotic, and more conscientious. And that's all been correlated with better outcomes in terms of employment, income, and that kind of thing.
Sure.
So there's, and which chicken and egg, right?
Sure. Okay.
So
right.
That all said, what they found is pre and post pandemic, extroversion, what is it? Neuroticism. Okay. They looked at a whole population and they subfractionated into young people and older people.
Okay.
Everybody across the population had increase or decreases in openness, extroversion, agreeableness. So those good sort of characteristics started to decrease, but with kids, those decreased and neuroticism went up
poor things,
instead of coming down. Mm-hmm. Now, does this surprise anyone? This is like the New England Journal of duh.
Right.
Okay. What they were trying to come up with reasons and I'm like, oh, let me see. Virtual school, keeping people apart, putting masks on faces.
Treating them like vectors,
telling them they're going to kill grandma.
Telling them they're going to die.
They're going to die. So they're wearing a full like hazmat suit getting on a plane. And you wonder why neuroticism went up, extroversion, agreeableness, and openness went down.
I see.
And these things are correlated with success. Now that doesn't
mean you like the study because we already believe the conclusion.
That's right.
I mean,
so my
really,
confirmation bias pulled this. And what was funny is it's funny when, as I was reading it, I was like, yeah, confirmation bias, total crap study, confirmation bias. Let's talk about it on the show.
But I mean, I guess I'd say I didn't even need the study to say that like, you know, I see it everywhere that people have been, their thermostat for disease and life is not everybody. Actually, to be honest, most people are normal.
Yeah.
When you actually go out into the world and travel, and we were supposed to talk about it, but you know, I've been traveling a lot lately, giving a lot of talks, and you've been traveling some lately, talks.
Yeah.
And when you go out into the world, you'll see like 99% of America is totally back to normal.
They're done.
They're done with everything and they're not going to do anything again. And that's probably why the little bivalent booster that they had to rush to market because it's going to be too late if we don't get it there fast has 3% uptake.
Yeah, nobody's
because ain't nobody want it.
Yeah,
because they already had Omicron or they don't care anymore. They're not worried.
Yep.
So people are back to normal, but there is a tiny fraction of people that is stuck, and they're stuck in peak pandemic.
Yep.
They're stuck in N95s and they're stuck in neuroticism.
Yeah.
And it's not healthy for them, and they happen to be disproportionately enriched in universities,
yes,
and in the New York Times, in these major journalism outlets,
high neuroticism,
because they are sitting from home, working on their laptop, writing their Zoom stories.
Totally. And you know what's funny? So speaking of the travel talks, you know, so I was in Virginia. I did a talk recently, and it was wonderful. Like nobody's wearing masks. It was great, but you could kind of feel like people come up afterward, do selfies, do all this kind of thing. And what was happening is there was one person I had an interaction with. They were like, oh yeah, it's just, I really loved your talk for these reasons. And I went to move a little closer to them because we were about the distance we're apart. And I went to move a little closer and they backed up.
Because of the halitosis.
It was the halitosis. It was. How'd you know, dude?
They backed up because they were scared of COVID.
And they were conditioned. It was an unconscious, they just kind of backed. And you could see there was almost a look on the face of like,
just like after we finished residency, if you would mail beep, 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 I'd reach for my belt.
Reach for the belt.
It's conditioned.
Or you hear that vent alarm that they used to have, the beep,
beep, beep, beep. And I'd go run to see what's going on. Take off the auto peep.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God. Dude, look at the crepitus.
Yeah.
By the way, this is like beauty filter vanai, real life vanai. Beauty filter vanai, real life vanai.
I don't like how focus means less beautiful, but okay, I'll allow it. Now, meanwhile, you talk about selfies. Did you see Gaukum Flecken in this fiasco?
No, I saw that he had done a thing for ASAP.
Yeah. And then, okay. So I guess Gaukum Flecken.
Who is he? Tell the world.
I think I forget his actual name, but his nom de plume, his moniker is Gaukum Flecken, which I guess is some eye thing.
It's an eye thing.
He's an eye doctor, private practice eye doctor in Oregon. And he makes funny videos.
Yeah.
And I think
TikTok style. Yeah.
TikTok short videos. And I think I've surely seen some that I've laughed at.
Yeah.
I think during the COVID-19 pandemic, he has, been aligned with some of the more COVIDian type forces.
Sure.
And that's natural because I think his politics are extremely progressive and, you know, it goes hand in parcel with it's the extreme left wing.
And he's huge on Twitter. So in order to do that and survive.
Maybe because Twitter is the extreme left wing place.
It is the extreme left wing place, yeah.
So I don't know what his personal views on all these matters are, but I suspect, but I've seen him, anytime I've seen him comment, it's all, the standard party line on the extreme left sort of COVIDian kind of thing.
Right.
And then he goes to give the keynote at some, emergency medicine doctor convention.
The American College of Emergency Physicians, which I've keynoted at, by the way.
Ah.
Yes.
Good.
Yes. Just for comparisons of apples and apples here.
Apples, you've keynoted it.
Yes. Well, great group.
I've not keynoted it, but I have a feeling that they're not going to invite me.
You'll never be asked. Yeah.
Well, actually, who knows?
You will.
Well, who knows because of this photograph show.
Oh, so what's happening?
Okay. So
I don't know this story. Yeah.
Among emergency medicine physicians active on Twitter, you would think that we are in the throes of April 2020 because they're always talking about how the hospital's always full and backed up and hashtag wear a mask, hashtag save other lives, hashtag this. Meanwhile, you go out there and it's like, 19, it's like 2019 out there. But anyway, they're very, several very vocal emergency medicine. I think people should know one bit of background. Twitter, the first specialty that infiltrated Twitter was emergency medicine. They were always one of the first ones to go to Twitter.
Yeah.
And they're all sort of, by virtue of having been there longer, they have a lot more followers they're very vocal.
Yeah.
And during the pandemic, every TV channel you turned on, you heard an emergency medicine frontline doctor, because that's how they were portrayed in the TV media. And the frontline doctor would talk about the wisdom of lockdown, which to me was a little bit problematic because you would really want to talk to somebody who has a lot of policy knowledge about the most broad, sweeping, historical policy change that has ever been implemented in human public health history. But I mean, or you can talk to a frontline person.
Talk to a hospitalist about should we force people not to smoke by law and gunpoint? And I would say, sure, because I see all the downside of smoking.
And maybe they should talk to me about the war in Ukraine, how to handle that. I don't know. Because I understand the fallout of radioactive materials because it can cause cancer.
Yeah. It's a big deal.
I'm the frontline. If you were to develop aplastic anemia after an untoward nuclear reaction, such as Chernobyl, you would come to me and
would you prescribe me the iodine prophylaxis tablets?
Depending on the radius you were to the site, I would happily give you some iodine. Yeah.
Good to know.
And I would be the one to tell you if you need cord blood or match unrelated donor. That's the Ooh. Expertise I bring. And by that logic, I should be the one to advise you about the
COVID lockdowns.
The COVID lockdowns and also whether or not we should continue to re-up arms in the Ukraine. Anyway.
Yes.
Okay. So back to this. Okay. So they're COVIDian. There are lots of ER doctors. They say wear the mask, hashtag tweet a mask.
Right.
And then he takes a selfie on stage. And in the selfie, he's cultivated a COVIDian following. Like all his fans are COVIDians. And the selfie is a video, like a 10-second video of him with the crowd in the background. And the crowd is thousands of people packed in a tiny auditorium.
And he's with his wife, right?
Yeah, I think she's part of the
Because she saved his life. He had a cardiac arrest.
It's almost like if it weren't true, you wouldn't believe it. I mean, it's a crazy story.
Yeah,
okay. So he takes a photo of the audience and the audience is like 100% unmasked.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they tweet it and—
Oh no.
Yeah. They get the first pass is like people are like, yay, so much fun. Doctors having fun.
It's always the first pass are rational people.
Rational people.
Yeah.
Then the second pass is, screw you. I used to like you. I used to follow you. But now, now you're unmasked. All these doctors are going to kill their patients, And then the point I made, which I commented about one of the comments, which is I was like, there is some truth here, which is that there is an irony, which is that these people who are active on Twitter saying hashtag wear a mask forever, they're not practicing what they preach. They are hypocrites.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have a problem with that. I really don't. But they happen to force their stupid fucking mask policy on the 2-year-olds.
That's where it gets.
In Head Start. The same morons who are tweeting that we should wear a mask forever are creating a Head Start program to keep them in mask as of a month ago. They're tweeting this nonsense and then they go to a conference and they're not practicing what they preach because they're total hypocrites. And that to me is the issue.
It's all fucking posturing on social media because social media is not the real world. Twitter's not the real world.
So we violated our rule, but.
But maybe we're going to drop a couple F-bombs.
Because you can't mask kids in Head Start. They're the most vulnerable group. You have no data. Your brain is not working if you think that's
left brain's working.
Yeah. Well, the neurotic part of the brain
the
is working.
The neurotic left brain. Yeah.
I mean, I think you really have to worry about some serious psychiatric problem if somebody genuinely believes that's actually going to help the pandemic.
Yeah.
Because that doesn't make any sense at all.
You know, and one side note about that I forgot to mention in this one is the left brain is associated with emotion. It's mostly righteous anger. Mm. And the left brain is actually blind to the fact that it could ever be wrong. So it's actually always right. And it's almost like we're seeing that kind of manifest. But you're right, it's total hypocrisy. So did glaucoma Flecken get in trouble then?
So he's, I think, a savvy Twitter user, yeah. So he knows the right answer is say nothing.
Right.
So he just, like, call it a coast.
Right.
But I think there were the wave of people who liked it, wave of people who hated on him,
yep.
And then the wave of people who liked to see the fighting, the circular firing squad.
Are eating the popcorn. Right.
Yeah.
That may be us.
because it is a circular firing squad.
Right.
If purity is the person, if the last person to take off the N95 is the most pure person, then all of us but one are impure. And they have created a situation. And Glaucoma Flecken is in part complicit with this because he has been pushing that messaging for a long time.
Live by the sword.
Live by the sword, die by the sword.
Yeah.
If you believe that there is, you need to articulate under what circumstances you believe it is safe to withdraw the mask. I articulated it very early on. The moment you get vaccinated, that's the moment to drop it. I stand by that articulation. That was right in 2021 when I wrote it. It's right today. They have created a new standard. They're using words like ableism and eugenics and all these other loaded words, mm-hmm. but they will not specify under what circumstances they want to drop it, except they're dropped it in their personal life because no one can actually abide by it. And so they are hypocrites, but their rhetoric has perpetuated this fiasco for the most vulnerable children in whom the data is the poorest. And that's what,
You know who does that too? The state of Iran. Where women are in the streets protesting against forced head coverings as the purity aspect.
But people don't like these
comparisons. Yeah. I know. I knew the minute I said it, I'm like, I'm going to get 1,000 angry tweet. Not that I look at Twitter, but 1,000 angry messages about how dare you compare the science to a theocracy.
I guess, as bad as I think it is for the kids in this country, I'm sure it's worse to be a woman in Iran.
1,000%.
1,000
worse,
times. Yeah. But the root across many societies is that people who are vulnerable, who don't have power, can have other people force them to do
things.
That's
what it is, yeah.
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 And people will force you to do things that they themselves won't do.
That's right. Well, now it's like almost the force is more a social pressure, you know? Like you and I both will cow to the social pressure if we're in a room where everybody's wearing a mask and they're staring at you. It's kind of like—
I just had to once, but I was like—
Yeah, I've had to do it too.
But I didn't want them to—because, the irony is like, not only are you the one not doing it, but you're the only one they'll remember because they see your face.
They see your face. I know. Everybody, I don't know who that guy was. Yeah, exactly. It's totally true. But it's a very right brain kind of thing to go, you know what? Choose your battles. And this is not going to change anybody's opinion, me not wearing a mask in this
room. What do you think about Glaucoma Flecken?
Yeah. So this is my take. And I didn't see the follow-up. I saw his thing showed up in my Twitter feed, I think, because I thought it was so interesting. I was like, wow, his wife and him did a talk together and what an interesting story. And I know ASAP and I know that audience. And so I was looking at it and I was like, wow, nobody wearing a mask. This is great.
Yeah.
Like that was my initial thing. I was like, oh wow, at least, we're not seeing like all this COVIDian craziness and this is great. And then hearing now what you're saying, I'm like, yeah, this is, I have been through this myself.
There's a million other tweets about like their selfies with the mask because they want a hashtag virtue signal.
I won't do that. Like this is the thing. You have to have some
authenticity.
Authenticity. Now, maybe that's authentically what he believes, right? That he should have worn a mask and he regrets it and so on and so forth.
Glaucoma
Flecken.
Right? And all the audience members.
Oh, are you talking about, wait. So you mean?
I don't know what he believes, actually, but
well,
I know,
but
he has some video about CDC where he was very critical of CDC relaxing policies.
I see.
So I would say that, and from the tweets of his I've seen where he has rarely commented about policy, he is on the COVIDian spectrum.
Got it.
And, but his devotees are true COVIDians.
Right. And let's see why that might be. It could be also the political thing, could be that he's on Twitter. It could be also that he's an ophthalmologist and people's in his face like this. And for him, like—
The halitosis.
Yeah, the halitosis.
He's doing it for the halitosis.
He's doing it for the halitosis. I mean, an N95 will screen out 33% of halitosis particles.
Ironically, surgical masks don't stop halitosis, which should tell you something about their efficacy.
Exactly. Because the stank, if it don't block the stank, put it back in the tank, right? I mean, I don't know what that means.
Well, it was a funny episode.
Well, I'll tell you what, Glaucoma Flecken. if that's how you say it, I don't even, Glaucomflecken.
Glaucomflecken. I don't know.
As someone who apparently has narrow angles and needs to see an ophthalmologist the end of this month, you are hereby invited to come and talk about this on the VPZD show, but you have to come in person and we'll ask him about it.
And is he allowed to wear a mask?
You are not allowed to wear a mask in our set.
Oh, but I don't think
you out because it's just inhuman in this place because we're all triple vaccinated and...
Open invitation, but I suspect he'll do the wise thing, which is let it die.
Yeah, let it die. Yeah, that's what I would do. Yeah, that's what I have done.
But I guess if to be honest, if I was on stage and I had that, you wouldn't get that. None of this would happen. Why? Because did VP ever once say
he's walking the walk?
Doing exactly what I said I would do.
That's the hypocrisy.
You know what it's like? Yeah. It's like the Republican congressperson who's against abortion. But then they paid for an abortion.
Yeah,
right?
Herschel Walker. Yeah.
There's always another one.
All of them. It's hypocrisy is the standard of care whenever you're virtue signaling. Usually that purity. I mean, you think the morality police in Iran are the paragons of virtue? You know, they're probably rapists and horrible people that are just using a chance to beat women and throw them in a van,
like,
you know?
Is there anyone who virtue signals who's actually virtuous?
It's a great question. Because maybe, why would you?
Maybe Francis. Pope Francis.
Pope Francis. Maybe. I don't even know.
From all accounts I've heard is the legit good dude.
Okay. That's good. Yeah.
But there are definitely others in those cloaks who... I'm going to run fast.
Yeah, exactly.
That
is a projection issue. Yeah.
But you know, one thing that we don't do, I hope not, but let's ask the listeners.
Yeah, maybe we do do it.
Do we actually signal, virtue signal? I don't think so.
Let's think, what could possibly we do that's virtue signaling, not maybe talking about not having to wear a mask when you don't need to?
But there's no virtue in that.
It's an anti-virtue.
And in fact, we said it at the time where it was deeply unpopular.
Right.
At least among the crowds
What else have we said that's unpopular?
I mean, the only thing we're virtuous about is—
Depends on the crowd, right?
Quality of the evidence.
Yeah.
But we don't virtue food or drink.
No.
We don't claim to be living better than you.
No.
In fact, we're probably living worse than you.
I'd say recently, sleep has been a problem. Have you slept?
I'm usually a good sleeper.
Yeah.
But I don't like sleeping in hotel rooms because all the sounds.
I can't do it. I end up running brown noise on my laptop all night.
Is that a euphemism?
What's the difference between brown and white noise? Yeah. Well, no, brown noise because I'm inclusive. I'm a Jedi.
Oh, I see.
I'm a Jedi. It's like apparently a mix of white noise and some other low frequencies. Calls it brown.
Do you really listen to this kind of noise?
So I have a noisemaker at home that we use when we sleep, and so I'm used to it. So when I go on to hotels, I run it too, and it masks a lot of background noise, and then it also, I'm just used to it. But I still don't sleep well in hotels.
It's hard to sleep in an unfamiliar setting.
Unfamiliar setting, and especially when you have something to do the next day, like you got to go give a talk for a few hundred people.
Speaking of which, you say, I generally sleep well, but not this morning because I agreed to give a talk in East Coast, 7 a.m. That's 4 a.m. our time.
Oh, God help us.
So I had to wake up at 3:50 and—
You need a better writer, Vinay Prasad.
Writer of my
contract? Yeah, like in your contract. Like mine says I want a pool full of
green
M&Ms.
You've assumed one thing, that there's a contract. There's no contract. They just emailed me and like, will you do this? I was like, okay. There's no contract. So there's no writer in a contract. It's just like, did it for free.
Because you're the academic hero, dude. You're just going out and doing these things. I will not. I mean, virtual is one thing, but like in-person talks, I tell you now, like you got to do a lot to get me to come physically where you are because it's such an ordeal. Like the Virginia thing was wonderful. The crowd was amazing. It was federally qualified health centers. Like the people doing God's work, like on the front lines, primary care, like wonderful humans. And I had some great conversations, a lot of VPZD fans.
That's
a lot of VP who were like, I could never say this publicly. I'm like, why?
Yeah.
This is terrible.
Tweet that.
Yeah, right. But to get there, it was a 5-hour flight or whatever to Detroit, and then an hour and a half flight on a tiny little rickety thing to get to Richmond, and you get there at midnight. Then you do the talk the next morning, and then you fly back, and it's another like 12-hour collective between connections.
Oh my God.
I'm like, you know, I'm old. Like, I don't do this really well, and that time is now I can't do my show. I can't spend time with family. I can't get work done.
Can't exercise.
Can't exercise. Sitting in a spot where I have two clotting disorders.
You don't get to cook. Oh yeah, your clotting disorder. Yeah, right. You talk about your predisposition. But I guess my question for you is, why'd you choose that flight path? If I had to go to Richmond, I would fly into Reagan.
Uh-huh. And then drive.
And take a car, yeah.
Yeah, I looked at that. The car ride was 2 hours.
Yeah.
And so I thought foolishly
that this would be better. And honestly, in the end, it probably was okay.
Yeah.
But, and I have to say, like, the guy who picked me up from the airport was awesome. He like owned the company that does the rides.
That's nice, yeah.
And so we got to talk and he had this Lincoln Continental 2021 and they don't make them anymore apparently.
Oh,
and so
classic.
He was, I showed real curiosity about this car because I don't know much about American luxury cars. And he was just talking it up about all the different features. And we listened to the stereo and he's like, I hope you like classic rock. I'm like, bro, come on. And so we were listening to Kansas or something. Carry on my wayward son. In
That's
this
good.
Lincoln Continental at midnight, cruising in Richmond. Crank. I had him crank it. And that was a highlight, honestly, of the whole thing.
And then you finger picked Dust in the Wind.
I did.
You know
I was
how
like,
to play
Dust in the Wind. No, I air finger picked it.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
It's a classic.
Can you play it?
I used to.
Wow.
When I was in college. Oh, you could learn it in an afternoon. It's not a hard song to learn.
Oh, you have to teach me. You know, okay. What we got to do? We got to go on the road with two guitars and do like a stupid parody.
The Dave Matthew, Tim Reynolds kind
exactly.
of.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, to be honest, I don't play that much anymore.
Me neither. Yeah.
But I bought this you nice have one out. Guitar.
Yeah, I have it out because for a while I went through a phase where the middle-aged man decided he was going to play a lot again. And I got reasonable to it because mostly what I do is improvise over backing chords. That's my thing.
But when you don't play, you know, the calluses go away.
They go away. And then when you do play, you're bleeding out of your fingers.
Did you ever read the story about Stevie Ray Vaughan?
You know, no. What happened?
Well, like Vaughn was known for like heavy string. And, you know, so if you listen to Stevie Ray's like.
He had like 13 gauge strings or something.
13 gauge, yeah.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
I mean, and he's also terrific. And like,
oh,
I mean,
God. And the tone.
Lenny, I mean, yeah. like, I mean, every yeah, song, yeah. Pride and Joy. I mean, Texas Flood, everything is
all
brilliant.
Of it, all of it.
But I heard once, and also he's like high as a kite.
All the time, like, all the time.
But I heard once he was like about to play. And this is an apocryphal story, so I don't know if it's true. So somebody can put in the comments if it's true. That he was about to play and he tore a callus off his finger. And so he was like, oh shit. And so he took a knife and it cut a piece of his heel and then super glued that to
no.
his fingertip.
No, that is a freaking star. You have to be really high to pull that off. Man, that guy, wow. And he died in that plane.
Called it a free flap. Yeah,
helicopter accident with Bob.
Yes.
Bob Rock, was it? I don't remember.
The irony is that you use all those drugs and you die in like...
I know, in a plane.
I know.
Ah. So speaking of drugs, schools. You were going to say something about school. I know. Talk about a segue. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe this will be the last thing, but.
Because we got to run. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we have to have a real more fun conversation, but okay. So these are real things that are still, this is like October 3rd. This is still happening.
These are tweets or articles?
This is a real email sent. Okay. Let me read it to you.
Okay.
Dear members of the Mount Holyoke College community. As we approach September 30th, the date at which our indoor mask mandate is set to expire, I'm writing with an update. I'm sorry to say that because of the relatively high confirmed COVID-19 case count on campus, approximately 50 per week, we will need to continue our indoor mask mandate until further notice. While I'm eager to move us from a mask mandate to a masks welcome and encourage policy, it is clear that the current levels of infection have taxed our campus healthcare system and residential services to the limit. As is the case across the country, Mount Holyoke is coping with position vacancies that are proving hard to fill. Making a change to the mask policy at a time when some of our campus operations are understaffed would be imprudent.
Well, this is a joke, right?
This
is a parody.
This is a real Mount Holyoke
this
email.
This is actually happening.
Let me read Fordham University. Fordham University, Fall 2020 Protocols. All university faculty, students, and staff must be fully up to date as defined by CDC as of November 1st, 2022, which includes the updated bivalent booster.
No.
Yeah. And then there's one. Then there's a president of the Fordham University partying at the Metropolitan Museum unmasked.
Of course.
Of course. And then this is another policy from Amherst. Prior to October 17th, faculty members will conduct an anonymous survey of their classes, either by collecting handwritten, no names, responses to the question, should masks be required in this class? If anyone in the class, including the instructor, wants to continue with masking, then the masks will be required. To which Nick Christakis at Yale, the Sterling Professor of Medicine, says, this masking policy is absurd and doesn't follow science.
Oh,
and there's another one that I can't find right now. I'm going to look for it.
What's the commonality so far? They're all like small liberal arts schools or what's going on?
Yeah, they're all, I think, liberal arts schools catering to the extreme far left COVIDian, the Glaucom Flecken crowd.
Right.
And they're creating irrational, pointless, futile, dehumanizing rules just to show that they're pure. It's a virtue signaling at a collegiate level.
This is, okay, so what's crazy about this is the first one where you said, oh, you know, the reason we're keeping this in is that our student health is busy.
Yeah,
in our residential
without any data.
Yeah, so we're going to force everybody in the campus to wear a covering on their face that
most likely isn't even helping.
Correct.
Because it's most likely a cloth piece of shit.
Correct.
And we're going to do that until further notice to just kind of maintain this semblance of control over the situation. And that is absolutely, I would demand my tuition back and demand to go to a real school.
Fordham University, this is the last one. All visitors on campus, 6 months of age and older.
No.
Will require proof of vaccination.
No.
To which I reply, I'm sorry, you don't look like the baby in the photo.
this is like stormtroopers, like, these aren't the droids you're looking for. You know, show us your papers.
You thought Cal Academy was hardcore.
Oh, dude.
It's like, show me your vaccine card and the child's.
And the child's? I'm sorry. And then they make the child pull the mask down so they could see his face. And they make the child, they goes, I'm sorry, so what's your name? It's like a 6 month old.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Oh, have you been vaccinated?
And the mother's like, he's only five. He's not 5 months. He's eligible. Oh, that looks like a 6 month old baby to me. Let's see if he can roll over or whatever. I forget all the
Watch this. Boo. Yeah.
he still has his moral reflex. Huh?
Yeah.
Now, doesn't that go away?
Or? It does go away.
So which is the one that you get at 6 months?
Shit. Oh. What? Yeah. They get a-
the milestones.
They definitely roll. I think they roll at six.
Perhaps.
I forget my own kids now.
There's milestones, but you know, I don't know, maybe the AAP is probably changing them as we
speak. That's true. That's true. No.
They did change those, the word, I mean, you know this?
Wait, what? They changed the word milestone?
Yeah, there was the big controversy around the ages and stages questionnaire. They changed like the number of words a kid should master.
I think
it was the level with which a consultancy was triggered. And they said it was all based on a pre-planned change to lower the false positive rate.
Oh my gosh.
But it just happened to coincide with like their mask zealotry. And they happen to be an organization that has about zero credibility, you know?
Wow.
Who knows when they changed the rollover baby in. But
Dude, this is depressing. But you know what? It's a fringe. It's honestly a fringe. But it's a fringe that's going to be this is educating kids.
It's sad. It's like the saddest kid. If I honestly pull your kids out of those schools, man. I mean, if your kids are in those schools, you probably have a lot of money because that's the kind of schools that the kids, right?
Absolutely.
And that person with money should pull their kids out of school and
put them in a real school. Yeah.
Send them to Texas school. Send them to some school that they got no. I mean, what are you teaching your kid?
You're teaching them no science.
You're teaching them, if they don't like Maitland Jones's teaching,
to write the petition.
This is the hand in hand.
That's right.
The Maitland Jones of the world.
Yep.
Let's say he's a good teacher.
Yep.
But he's a hard grader.
Yeah.
That hypothetical.
Yep. You've set it up for that.
Yeah.
You're shooting. It's again, the circular firing squad.
And then what if you were like in class and then you're like, Vinay, do you know the answer to that question? You know what? I don't know the answer to that question. And one more thing, professor, it's time you put a mask on. Boom. Gotcha. Because one person votes.
Yeah.
That's, again, giving them too much power.
Yeah.
This is crazy.
The one high neuroticism kind of person who's super anxious and would lock themselves in their house if they could can make everyone wear a mask.
What's the science behind?
With no science.
What? This is crazy.
By the way, I've yet to see people who keep saying, well, this is the science. Where is that science again?
Every time they say it is, they refer you to MMWRs.
Right.
And by the way, we got some project going on this and we're going to
have a lot of updates.
Yeah. I have a lot of peer review papers on COVID coming.
Nice.
Oh, yeah.
Who are your peers that review this?
These are good journals. Oh. I mean, I don't control it. The editor picks it.
Yeah. So actual peer review.
Oh, yeah. Because so many papers, I mean, you know, peer review papers aren't like commentaries. They take longer to do.
Yep.
But when I'm done with them, they're going to be good.
So, dude, I'm excited. So last thing I'm going to say is our prophecy that this mishandling of vaccine mandates and all this other stuff.
Oh yeah, last topic. Yeah,
it's bearing the fruit because now there's a large increase in anti-vaccine legislation around the country that will even affect the mandate for kids' vaccines, normal kids' vaccines, and what we've seen is the rate of population sort of adherence to childhood vaccines as a theory, as a principle, went from 90%+ in the around 2001 to 80 something. It's dropped by 10 percentage points since the pandemic. Why? Because nobody trusts people who don't actually make any sense.
Yeah.
And when you blow your mandate load on something that shouldn't be mandated,
that's right.
That's what's going to happen. So that's just
And then the more they kept saying, the COVID-19 shot in a four-year-old is just like routine vaccination. What you're really saying is routine vaccination is not that important.
It's trash.
Because you should have been clear. Yep. Routine vaccination is important, but whether or not they get the COVID shot is like, you can do it if you want it. We're not going to push it. In fact, Pfizer technically failed the non-inferiority margin. We had to give them a protocol amendment. And that's what other countries are doing. They're not enforcing it. They're not pushing it. They're not...
They're rational actors.
Yeah, European
countries. Right brain, left brain balance.
I wonder why Europe has done so much better than we in these policies.
You know, they're just generally... Yeah, it's a good question, actually.
You know, there's Sensible Medicine we published this week that Israeli, she's like a cancer center director.
Yeah, I saw that. It was great.
And she has a totally different view on Israel policy.
Yeah.
And it is a counterpoint.
And counter, because really people will point to Israel and go, see, they did the whole COVIDian thing and look at
but
this.
But they have dissenters too.
Absolutely. And those dissenters may well be right. They of course, you know, are. Again, I think, are we ever going to science this up? Who's got the incentive to do it?
I don't know. I think that there will be some need for setting the public record straight.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's why, well, like I said, I got a bunch of articles in peer review.
Mm-hmm.
And when they come out,
yeah,
I will come back on the show and I'll walk you through.
I can't wait.
And we'll set the record
That'll
straight.
Be great. Sensible Medicine times 20. And last thing, do you want to say anything about Zuck or you want to leave it for another time?
No, we'll leave it for another time. On my Substack, they can read, I listened to the 3-hour interview, Rogan Zuckerberg.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And,
you got something to say?
Yeah. It's in the Substack.
I will check
And
it
next
out.
Time we'll talk about it.
That's great.
All right.
All right, brother.
Good to
we
see you.
We did a thing. Good to see you. Hey, you know what to do. Subscribe to the show. Leave
Wait,
a review.
You couldn't see me unless you put those on.
I see a beauty filtered version. Oh!
Yeah. Now you see all warts and all.
I see warts and all. I see beauty emanating and
but
profound
you know what?
Authenticity.
Unlike Zuck, I don't use an avatar. You're going to see me. This is the way I am.
You go into the metaverse, you're not going to see VP there.
No.
Because VP's in the realiverse.
Yeah. You'll never find me in a metaverse.
No way, dude. I could, unless it's a porn metaverse.
The only way you'll find me in a metaverse is masked and triple boosted.
Oh, totally. That'll be your alter ego.
Masked.
Like a total projection of the opposite.
It's
of
like they've mandated the metaverse in addition to the booster.
God, dude, you got to wear an N95 on your avatar.
You probably do.
I bet that would happen.
Actually, there was that photo. Oh, I was so tempted. Somebody tweeted that they use that VR head, Oculus. What
yeah,
is it? Oculus?
The Oculus.
But they were wearing an N95 because there were two of them in the ring.
No. Oh, yeah. My God, dude.
What's the point?
It's great. It's great.
All right.
All right. We did it. Subscribe to the show. Leave a review. We leave all the links. Sensiblemedicine.substack.com.
And Vinay Prasad's observations and thoughts at substack.com.
And zdogmd.com/supporters to join our supporter tribe. And
I can't use that word anymore.
Tribe. Sorry. Our supporter group of non-ableist, non-eugenicists.
Childhood nutrition, we're not going to do anything about, but we can work on this word choice. Yeah. Okay. Great.
They'll be
great.
Fat.
Another win for progressive. Yes.
Yes. Yes. The progressive
another win
agenda.
For true progressivism.
Our progressive agenda.
Yeah. That's not my progressive agenda. My progressive agenda is the things that actually matter and trying to fix those.
That's what I mean. Our real progressive agenda, which is, hey, be nice to people, have some degree of equity around income and things like that by making it equality of opportunity, you know, maybe cover everybody at some point for
medical problems. Sure.
Maybe fix medicine so it's not so expensive.
Yeah.
Do
and
the
it's
right
not
thing.
About profiteering. It's about good medicine.
That's
yeah.
Right. And then sell out to pharma any chance you get.
That's a classic right-wing agenda.
Go on. All right.
All right.
Love you. We out.